Let's move on to hypertension. Remember, 90 to 95% of hypertension is what we call essential hypertension. We don't know why it happens. But there are a small percentage of patients with high blood pressure where there is an underlying reason. And it's important to think about three things: REV, renal causes, endocrine causes, and vascular causes. So look out in questions for patients who have high blood pressure for any of the following. R, renal, things like polycystic kidney disease, pyelonephritis, glomerulonephritis, diabetes, things like renal cell carcinoma. Next is E, endocrine. Look out for signs that suggest Kahn syndrome or Cushing syndrome or acromegaly or phachromocytoma, for example. V, vascular, things like aortic coarctation and renal artery stenosis. REV, REV, secondary hypertension reasons to look out for. X-ray. And there's a couple of key things in the story that you may see in questions that can tell you what kind of injury may have happened to a knee. Words like twisting or pivoting, for example, can mean menisci injuries. The word hyperextension can make you think about anterior or posterior cruciate injuries. Locking suggests a meniscal injury or an anterior cruciate tear. The words popping or tearing sensation can indicate meniscal or ligament tears. If the knee swelling that happens is rapid, it can suggest a ligament rupture or patella dislocation. Whereas if the swelling is more slow, then it can suggest meniscal injury, as can recurrent swelling. Let's move on to TB or tuberculosis. There are three types, of course: pulmonary TB, extrapulmonary TB, and latent TB. Pulmonary TB presents with the classic features: cough, hemoptysis, fever, night sweats, weight loss, etc. Extrapulmonary TB essentially means TB in any other part of the body apart from the lung. You'd think about if you see someone with lymphadenopathy, bone or joint pain, abdominal pain, essentially symptoms related to the individual part of the body that's affected, as well as classic things like night sweats, fevers, and weight loss. Latent TB is dormant TB, which is not currently infectious and is currently asymptomatic. And the reason it's still important is that 10% can reactivate at some point in the future. So if you see someone with suspected TB, if it's pulmonary TB, a chest x-ray should be arranged, as well as three sputum samples, with one of them being in the morning, sent off for microscopy and for the presence of AFBs, or acid fast bacilli. If it's extrapulmonary TB that we're suspecting, then the chest x-ray and tests relevant to that particular site will be important to arrange. In terms of treatment of tuberculosis, remember the four main drugs based on RIPE, R-I-P-E: rifampicin, isoniazid, pyrazinamide, and ethambutol. The first two, rifampicin and isoniazid, are taken for 6 months usually, whereas the bottom two, pyrazinamide and ethambutol, are just for the first 2 months. There are some classic side effects to remember. With rifampicin, it can cause an orange discoloration of urine or saliva. Isoniazid can lead to peripheral neuropathy, pyrazinamide can increase your chances of gout, and ethambutol can lead to various eye problems like color blindness and optic neuritis. The E for ethambutol links with the E to eyes. Moving on to skin cancer. Look in the question for risk factors: sun exposure, tanning beds, and smoking in particular. There are three main types that a question might describe: BCC, basal cell carcinoma, often known as a rodent ulcer, SCC, or squamous cell carcinoma, and a melanoma. Now, a BCC, or basal cell carcinoma, is often described as an ulcer with a rolled edge. The main worry is invasion as opposed to metastases, so it's usually a routine dermatology referral, although you can do an urgent referral if you're worried that it's getting close to certain structures like eyes or nose. Squamous cell carcinomas look in the question for words like keratinized, ulcerated, or crusted tumor. Usually it's on the head or the neck, and we should be thinking about an urgent dermatology referral. Melanomas are cancerous growths of melanocytes, usually originating from a mole. We should be thinking about an urgent 2-week dermatology referral if we're suspicious of a melanoma or if our 7-point checklist scores 3 or more. So let's look at hypercalcemia and hypocalcemia and how they may present in questions. So we'll start with hypercalcemia. Remember, the first thing to check is, have the levels of calcium been adjusted for albumin levels, i.e. is it a corrected calcium level? It may present in various ways: GI upset, for example, pain and vomiting, polydipsia and polyuria, depression, muscle weakness, dehydration, and ultimately arrhythmias and a coma. The commonest causes, as mentioned, are things like primary hyperparathyroidism, but also things like malignancy, sarcoidosis, TB, and certain drugs like thiazole diuretics can cause it as well. Acute management will be hospital-based, including things like IV saline, loop diuretics, things like bisphosphonates and steroids. And then hypocalcemia will present again with a variety of key features: muscle pain, facial twitching, paresthesia, carpopedal spasm, and convulsions may be all features. Causes can include hypoparathyroidism, like we mentioned, but also things like vitamin D deficiency, hyperventilation, things like pancreatitis, and use of medications, for example, bisphosphonates. So let's move on to primary prevention. Remember, we try and prevent people from developing cardiovascular disease. And remember, the five cardiovascular diseases consist of angina, MI, stroke, TIA, and peripheral vascular disease. And there may be certain risk factors that we can target in terms of management to reduce people's risk. So you have your non-modifiable risk factors, things like age, family history, being male, and ethnicity. But then we have modifiable risk factors, and sometimes answers may represent changing these in terms of reducing cardiovascular risk. Looking at blood pressure, looking at lipid levels, smoking, alcohol, exercise, weight, and diet, to name a few. I will expand on these throughout the audiobook. Lyme disease can be caused by a tick bite. Think about any history of patients who have been in forests, woodlands, or heathlands in particular. There's a classic rash that may be described, erythema migrans, which is red with a bullseye type appearance. The problem with Lyme disease is that it can affect multi-systems, so joints, neurological systems, for example, as well. Treatment is usually antibiotic-based, for example, doxycycline, but sometimes things like amoxicillin and azithromycin, depending on the extent of involvement, age, etc. So look out for all three of these in particular questions. Second, one of the first things that I do in a question about dyspepsia or indigestion is look at a medication list. Is this person taking NSAIDs like ibuprofen, steroids, SSRI medication, bisphosphonates, calcium blockers, alpha blockers? These are all common causes of dyspepsia symptoms. Are there any red flag symptoms that would indicate the need for an urgent referral for an endoscopy? And we'll talk about these in more detail. But how do we manage uninvestigated dyspepsia, so someone who hasn't got any red flag features? There are two strategies to start with. Number one, a one-month trial of a full-dose PPI, or proton pump inhibitor, like omeprazole or lansoprazole, and then review the patient. Or, number two, test for Helicobacter pylori, or H. pylori bacterial infection, using either a urea breath test or a stool antigen, and then eradication therapy if needed. If you try one of these two strategies and they don't work, then you flip and you try the other one and you review them again. It's worth mentioning epiglottitis, or inflammation of the epiglottis, a rare, potentially life-threatening condition that can lead to the patient being very unwell. Apart from sore throat, fever, and being unwell, there may be classic findings of the patient drooling from the mouth or the presence of stridor, or upper airway obstruction. The classic thing would be to not use a tongue depressor if you suspect epiglottitis, because it can trigger laryngeal obstruction. Instead, we should be referring urgently to ENT for further assessment, for example, laryngoscopy, IV, or oral antibiotics.